Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Hi everybody, and welcome to Wonceville episode 103. We're here to talk about the Once Upon a Time season 6 winter finale, What You Wish For. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by my fellow co-hosts Karen and Kristen. Hello.
Hi.
All right, let's dive right in to the winter finale. Is this episode a thumbs up or a thumbs down? How about Kristen? You go first.
Well, for me, it's definitely a thumbs up. It was a really good episode. It had a lot of the drama we like to see on Once Upon a Time, and it was rather enjoyable, despite the rumple of it all. It was still a good, solid episode and lots of fun, so definitely a thumbs up for me.
And Karen, how about you?
This gets 2 thumbs up for me, because I really loved it. It felt like the old Once Upon a Time for me, and I'm kind of shocked because I don't know how that even happened, but Regina was great. Emma, I really liked seeing her in the Enchanted Forest as kind of a different character, and then shaking that character off and becoming herself again. It was really nice. I even didn't mind, like, Rumple in this episode, because he was still terrible and everybody knows he's terrible, and like, I'm into that. There's one moment that I wasn't happy about, but other than that, it just felt like Once Upon a Time again, and there were some great plot twists and some great lines, great moments, and I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. I am also going to give it a thumbs up. I thought it was a really strong winter finale. I did have a few problems with it, most of them obviously lie in the Rumple area, but I think that Once Upon a Time really strives when they go into alternate realities, and this was no different. I think Regina was amazing. The Evil Queen showed a lot of vulnerability, which I really liked in her character this week, and yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it. I'm really excited to get to our favorite quotes, because first of all, 2 of them are one word. So great. And another one is just hilarious. So we'll do Kristen, then Karen, to go in order of the way that this conversation plays out.
Sure. So mine was from Aladdin, and it was when he was making the Evil Queen her drink and says, "Apple teeny. A bit on the nose, even for you." Just genius. I mean, come on.
This entire scene was my favorite part of the entire episode. And Karen, please dive into this line and unpack all the meaning in it.
Oh, I will. I will. So same scene. The Evil Queen is just being herself. And the thing about her is, like, she feels like she can manipulate anybody. And she either does that through her power and her ability to manipulate people because she has so much power. But she also does it through her sex appeal. And we've seen her do it with Rumple. And she tries to do it with Aladdin. And Aladdin is having none of it. And he just looks at her and goes, "Ew." And it was so automatic and genuine, and he was so disgusted that it was so great. I loved it so much.
My favorite line was from Regina when she first gets to the alternate reality Enchanted Forest, and she sees that giant marble-less, like, statue of Snow and David, and it was like to commemorate the defeat of the Evil Queen, and she just, like, raises that one signature eyebrow and is like, seriously? Like, even though she's been against the Evil Queen this whole season, she still has that deep-seated thing just drive her crazy, but now she's kind of able to jokingly hate it, which I like a lot.
I love that she's genuinely friends with Snow and David now, but, like, even she can't let it go how, like, sugary sweet they are sometimes and how pure and good. And she's just like, really, guys, like, you just have to keep doing this to me. And yeah, it isn't fun, but like, I'm glad that they haven't dropped that, that she hasn't completely lost her edge, because her edge, even as a hero, is one of the things that makes us love her the most.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There is one character whose edge makes us hate him more and more and more, and I kind of want to kick off the conversation with Rumpel. Very uncharacteristic, I know, but there's a lot more good stuff to get to, so I want to get this out of the way. I want to just highlight a point that we talked about last week, which I left in the doc on purpose because I wrote, Rumpel and Belle in Storybrooke is once upon a time finally ready to accept that this relationship is too far gone. And to follow up, no, they have not. it's so bad. One touching moment where they realize what they've been doing to each other does not make up for the fact for what Rumpel did to Belle. I don't know how much more clear we as a collective can be about this. And I'm just not sure what their motivation is for trying to push these two people back together.
Well, and okay, when you're telling a story about fairy tale characters, I know that the whole, you know, everybody gets a happily ever after thing is so tempting, but it would make the show so much stronger if they just admitted that these two do not belong together. Just flat out made the declaration that, yes, Beauty and the Beast in their story end up together, but the way we're taking this, they can't. Like, Snow and Charming are our traditional happily ever after, we'll always find each other couple. And then you've got Emma and Hook, who are a little less traditional, but they're going to find happiness. They're going to find a way. It would make so much more sense if Rumpel and Belle, who started out happy, could not make it, just could not make it work. It would cover all of the relationship bases, because you've also got Regina, who is ready and looking for love, and every time she finds it, it gets ripped away. And that is a whole different kind of story that they're telling with her and have been telling it very effectively for, you know, 5-6 seasons now. So I feel like they need to accept that this relationship is not going to happen. I think it would just make everything stronger. I don't understand why they keep trying to make us see the light and they will, you know, they will make it. Like, no, just accept it.
And we know that you can have more than one love of your life. So who's to say that Belle can't find somebody else to make her happy and to complete her story? And then Rumpel just gets defeated / murdered horrendously.
Yeah, like, maybe there's a different beast out there that Belle is supposed to help.
That would be really interesting, and it would just add, not that this show needs more layers and complexity, but it would really add to the show if it wasn't what we thought it was in the beginning. And like, yes, he was the beast, and yes, they did love each other at one moment, but Belle's story doesn't end with Rumpel. He was maybe the midpoint for her, and then she can go beyond him and find somebody else that completes her story. And whether or not it's the beast, like, I like the idea of her finding another beast because I like staying in that tradition of the original stories. But even if it wasn't, to find somebody else that complements her even better wouldn't ruin the original story. So I think they could still do it, but I really don't know if they will, to be honest.
Yeah, and you know, it's season 6. We're pretty late in the game for them to turn this around or to really play it out for much longer and still give Belle a shot at having a happily ever after with either starting another Beast storyline or kind of just finding within herself some way, you know, to accept her life, and hopefully that will include her child once we figure out what's going on there. But I just don't think that one touching moment where they look at each other and say, like, how did we get here, it doesn't erase anything that was said or done. in the past. It's all still very much there. And the fact that they chose in that moment to physically push them together to where, like, they're almost hugging, it was way too much. I was like, get away from her. I felt very, like, guard doggy protective of Belle. And he wasn't even threatening her in that moment. So that just goes to show the type of person that he's become. And it's just not good for anyone, including the show.
Yeah, honestly, I would be fine if these two, like, separated and she had some story all her own with other things. And, like, in the series finale, you see her, like, meet someone and it just becomes clear that he was not the Beast for this Belle. Like, it would be fine if it was something that happened down the line and that we got to see Aunt Belle be all on her own and doing her own thing. Like, that would be amazing. But I don't know if we're ever going to get that either.
And the reason that they came together in this episode was because of Gideon's disappearance. So Rumpel is obviously upset, and that's fine. He deserves to be upset. But Belle is also now worried about the fact that her son was kidnapped. He wasn't taken by Blue. They discover that Blue was ambushed by the Black Fairy, and the Black Fairy took their son. So Rumpel's family has got a lot of answering to do to the Frenches. I feel like we're definitely going to have this character come back. I know that was a concern on our episode last week, was whether or not we get to see more of this character. And I think we are going to have to, mainly because of the fact that Gideon, I keep wanting to call him Morpheus because that's how he was introduced to us. Gideon returns a fully grown man. Wherever she took him is a place where time speeds up. And I think we need to learn about that landscape in a way. I'm not entirely sure if it's like a spell or some fairy magic or what, but we're going to need a little bit more information about that. So what did you think of the reveal that Gideon was the person under the hood and the fact that he is now fully grown within a day?
Well, Kristen called it.
Oh, okay. Good for you. I didn't know.
I didn't call it that far ahead. As soon as Rumpel said that time works differently in that dimension, I knew that we would see grown-up Gideon again. Like, the second he said that, I knew they were setting up that we weren't going to see baby Gideon again. We were going to see him as we saw him in Belle's visions. But it wasn't until, like, he was opening the door to the shop that I knew it was Gideon. And then, like, seconds later, he takes the hood off. I knew right before he took the hood down that it was him. And it just, there's, you know, just, it was a really good twist. I definitely didn't see it coming. I would not have guessed that Gideon was the one under the hood.
I was completely shocked. And she started, like, going, oh, and I was like, I have no idea. I'm not on the same wavelength. And it wasn't until he lowered his hood that I figured it out. I would have bet money that it was Jafar between the snake and just kind of everything that's been going on so far. It would tie into the story. And when the person lowered their hood and it was Gideon, I was shocked. And I think that was one of the reasons why I ended up really liking this episode, because it was a plot twist I didn't see coming. And those are hard to come by on Once Upon a Time. So, like, I'm not super stoked that Gideon is the bad guy, but it's definitely going to lead to an interesting story.
I'm hesitant to call him the bad guy because of the fact that he's only been alive a day, and clearly something is going on against his will. So he didn't have any say in how he got corrupted and all of this evilness that's sort of embedded in him. So I'm really interested to just get some more information about him and everything else. I was pleasantly surprised that it was him, with the caveat that I'm miserable that it brought Rumple and Belle back together, even if only for a little bit. Like, I'm really excited about Gideon, but I'm just, why did they have to have that other element to it? Hopefully it'll be resolved. Okay.
I will say, and I am hesitant to say this because it's a fine line. I mean, everybody knows. I don't like Rumple. I don't think he's worth keeping around. I think they have to be very strict on how they handle his story. That said, if they are going to keep him around, the way that Belle and Rumple work together in this episode, I didn't feel any romance between them, which is very different for Rumple. It was solely focused on their child, and it felt distant between them. And, like, if he has to stick around, if we have to continue having him on the show, and he has to continue being in Belle's life, at least give us that much. At least make him stop pining after her and make it this relationship where it's like, look, I know you don't like me. I know I'm never going to get you back, but we have to be in each other's life for our child. So let's just, like, get this over with kind of thing. Which is another reason why I was like, I didn't love some of the Rumple stuff in this, but I also kind of didn't mind it because it felt like a different dynamic between them in this episode in particular.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's a great point and something we'll definitely have to look for when the show returns. We're entering that long hiatus period. I always forget how long Once Upon a Time goes on hiatus until it's actually here. And then I'm like, oh, I don't have to look at this till March or something.
Yeah, like 3 months, right?
Yeah, it's crazy because other ABC shows like Grey's Anatomy and stuff, they pace out their break. So they're back like middle January and then they go on another like 3 week break here. They'll do a 2 week break here. So they, they really space it out. Let's talk about the rest of the show, which was far more exciting and awesome and classic Once Upon a Time viewing experience. So Regina and the Evil Queen come to a head again, and Emma is there. Now, we've seen the Evil Queen at Robin's grave, and Regina get really mad about it. And I've just been thinking, because Robin's back and all this stuff, how do we feel about the idea that the Evil Queen is mourning Robin? Do you feel like any pull that relationship meant anything to her? Because they are the same person, so she does have that pain inside, unless that pain could stay with Regina. See, I'm really confused as to like what gets split where, because we're supposed to believe that one is pure evil and one is good, and I've been having a harder time believing that Regina is 100% pure and the Evil Queen is 100% evil as these lines are becoming blurred. So I was just wondering how you guys thought about the division of mourning Robin pain.
That's a really good point. When I think about the differences between Regina and the Evil Queen, I don't necessarily think of them as the same person. I think of Regina as the person and the Evil Queen as an aspect of that person that was drawn out of her. And I don't think that Regina is 100% pure, just because, like, she's still Regina and she still has some of the same reactions that she always did. It didn't necessarily fix her, but I think maybe it lessened the struggle. Whereas the Queen, I do think that the majority of her is evil, but she still has some feelings. I mean, I don't particularly love her interactions with Henry, but I do still think that she cares for him as her child. Now, how far that would go, like if Rumple was like, okay, kill Henry and I'll give you anything you want. I'm not entirely sure that the queen could do that, but I think maybe she would entertain the idea longer than Regina would. So I think it's sort of on a spectrum rather than one is pure evil, one is pure good. So in terms of her mourning Robin, it's hard to say. I think a part of her does feel that, but I think that it's a very small part and also feels a little disingenuous because the person that Robin fell in love with was Regina. He accepted the Evil Queen as part of Regina, but and was able to move past that, but it was the person that Regina became that Robin fell in love with, and that person fell in love with Robin. So the idea that the Evil Queen is feeling some of these things when she would know Robin wouldn't approve of who she is kind of hard to get by.
I definitely kind of agree with you, but I do, like, the Evil Queen part of Regina was also part of her looking for that happy ending last year. Like, we heard a lot about Regina finding her happy ending. And I do believe that the Evil Queen was, like, a part of that because she was a part of her. I know when this season started, I expected Regina to be a little pure in her goodness. Like, I expected her to feel a little less pulled toward the evil side. And maybe she has, and we just haven't really, you know, dealt with it. But it doesn't really feel that way to me. I think Regina is Regina. She's the woman, the complicated woman we've all come to love. And the Evil Queen is just the darker side. She's literally the character we left in the Enchanted Forest. So she's not entirely, you know, wholly evil as almost no one is, but, you know, she's mainly looking for evil and bad. So when it comes to the Robin stuff, I feel like, yeah, she is mourning him a little bit because she was a part of Regina looking for her happy ending as she has, you know, even in the Enchanted Forest, like she wanted to ruin other people's happy endings because she wasn't finding her own. And so I can see why she would mourn him a little, but not as much as Regina. She should definitely be more involved here.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that because it just feels like she's just trying to get under Regina's skin and make Regina take a step back without, you know, attacking her right in that moment. It just buys her like 30 seconds or something because Emma eventually gets so flustered that she lashes out at the Evil Queen and she just, you know, she's carrying around that sword because that's the sword that can kill the Evil Queen, we come to find out. So good thing she knew that she needed to take it with her at all times. And
I was kind of annoyed with Emma in this scene, not gonna lie. Like, yeah, she was flustered and angry and she lashed out, but like control yourself. She had no idea that that wouldn't also hurt Regina.
Yeah.
That was like, that was kind of like mean.
And she like catches herself because as soon as she lunges, she turns around and she's like, oh my God. And I'm like, yeah, oh my God. Like, you almost killed your friend.
So, okay, I think that this ability of the sword to kill slash hurt the Evil Queen without hurting Regina, I think it has other significance. Okay, before we knew that Gideon was under the hood, I was convinced, and I called this out in the episode, I told Karen, I was like, crack theory time, here we go. I was convinced that we were going to find out that quote-unquote evil Emma was under the hood, and that she was going to have to use, like, the sword. Like, it was going to be one of them dying. And so we might be seeing evil Emma dying in her vision. And it wasn't really her. I'm kind of wondering if seeing the sword here injure the Evil Queen and not Regina was, like, a sign that this is the sword that can take out anybody's evil side. And so if it comes into use later to kill the Evil Queen, awesome. If it comes in use later to injure someone else's evilness, so be it. I don't know if that's, you know, what we were supposed to take from this, but it's definitely where my brain went.
No, I think that that's a great point because it's once upon a time. You can't really rule anything out. And they really like to play with a theme once they have it. And right now that theme is identity and personality. That's what we've really been focusing on this entire season. And this sword gives us a gateway into a whole new realm of possibilities with who can and cannot be killed and what type of counterpart can be cut out of a person and who can die in alternate realities and it not mean anything because we'll get there. But just to bridge this one part of the alternate universe, when Henry throws that sword at Regina in the alternate reality, I was like, oh, Regina can die here because she's real and Emma's real and nothing else is. And that sword is real because it got transported. So it's all sorts of weird rules that we need to like parse through, especially since we're going to be staying in that alternate reality when next season opens. But let's get there. We got to get there. And the way we get there is through the Evil Queen. So she steals the lamp and makes Aladdin her master. Her first wish is to grant Emma a wish by saying that she is no longer the savior. What happens is Emma, who again, luckily happens to be walking around everywhere with that damn sword, disappears and wakes up in this new reality where she was always with her parents. She grew up with them. The kingdom defeated the Evil Queen and everybody aged appropriately. And it's wonderful. And
I was like, why are they so old? And Kristen was like, because they never were stuck in the curse. And it blew my mind. She was like, they look so old. Like, she kind of had the same reaction Regina did. And it was like, yeah, they didn't age those 30, they aged for 30 years that they didn't before. And it was like, you know, light bulb, like, oh, yeah, Emma's not their peer. She's their daughter. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Craziness.
And she also, like, she could have played age appropriate, but apparently they raised her with, like, the mannerisms and mind of a toddler, even though she has a son and was at one point married to Prince Neil, who they couldn't bring him back in this alternate reality.
I mean,
they did with the painting, but not the same.
It was he nice had to be see dead. Painting. Okay. I'm of two minds here because Emma really annoyed me in this alternate universe because she was so demure and she was not a hero in the slightest. But at the same time, like, oh, it was so nice to see Emma completely different and to see Jennifer, like, play a different side of her. And even though I didn't necessarily like it and I kind of wish that her personality had sort of fed off of the Emma we know now, like, I get she was raised differently so she would, her personality would be different. But I feel like at people's core, they have a certain sort of stack of things, I can't come up with the words, about them that makes them them. And that doesn't necessarily change. But this Emma felt completely different from the other Emma. So on the one hand, it was really fun to watch. And it was really funny seeing her interactions with Regina and Regina getting so fed up with her. But on the other hand, it was, yeah.
I mean, it makes you appreciate Savior Emma. Like, Princess Emma makes you appreciate just how awesome and badass Savior Emma really is. And, you know, if anything else, it's funny to see her in the dresses and whistling and humming in the forest and, you know, being a total wimp because you're like, that is so not Emma. You know, I know that this was supposed to be like, oh, it's a wish first, basically. It's, you know, it's a different reality. But I feel like in this little version of reality, it's heightened beyond measure. Like, it's Emma to the nth degree. It's who she would have been if, you know, she was the princess in this kingdom where the evil queen has been defeated forever, and there's no conflict, and, you know, she has no reason to fight or be at all worried about her fate. So I kind of just took it as that it was crazy, peaceful kingdom, and so she never had to confront being a warrior or a savior at all.
Mm-hmm. And I was half expecting once... So, let's start here. So, Regina gets herself a wish granted because she comes to realize that she has shared custody of the lamp because technically the evil queen is her. And there's this great moment of realization in the mayor's office right after the scene we talked about earlier in our favorite quotes with Aladdin making apple teenies, where the evil queen realizes that Regina got two steps ahead of her and acted before she was able to process what was going on. And I thought that that was just such a great moment to witness. And so Regina, when she says, genie, and he's like, oh God, yes, before he... like grants a wish. Oh, so great. Aladdin.
He's so ready.
Aladdin came out of nowhere this episode and just performed. It made me less angry that he was nowhere to be found for all of these years. But she wishes not for anything against the evil queen, not to bring Emma back, which I thought was interesting, but to... because you can't undo wishes, I guess. Now it's all clicking. But she wishes to go where Emma is, and that means that she's transported to this alternate reality where she still very much looks like the evil queen, even in her modern clothing. So as she's yelling, dwarves, dwarves, of course they're terrified of her. They think she escaped banishment and made her way back into the Enchanted Forest. So she has to... change up how she approaches everyone, including Snow and David and Emma, because they're not buying her. This isn't real game. So she finds her abandoned castle, and then she finds Rumpel, who apparently everyone was like, you know what? If we just leave him locked here, he will not be a problem. Are those bars like magic? I forget how her...
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they'd have to be because there's no way he was just sitting there with nothing to do.
Yeah, I think they were like magic proofed or something. Oh. Or made of some special material that, I don't know. Yeah. I remember them saying something about that at some point.
But Rumpel, an interesting thing that I think is going to come back in the spring is that Rumpel knows what's going on. I'm a little... leery on what his role can be in this Enchanted Forest alternate reality, because he knows about Storybrooke, he knows that Emma is the savior, and there were only those two little slips that he let go, but Regina kind of brushed it aside because she just wanted to make the exchange for the magic bean, get the inspiration to turn herself into the evil queen and play the part in order to convince Emma that she really is the savior. I'm just interested if you guys caught any of that before they released him to go run free and do whatever he wants in the dream world or wish universe. I guess we should call it that.
I will say that I was quite concerned over Rumpel's role here, and yeah, the way that he kept saying, like, I'm going to go raise some fake villages now. I'm like, are they fake, though? Like, I feel like even in the alternate reality that is apparently not real, we shouldn't let Rumpel run around free. Mm-hmm. Just seems like poor decision making.
Yeah. You have to agree. Letting him loose is never a good decision. Like, giving him the ability to make trouble should probably just always be a no. Just keep him locked up by every means necessary.
Yeah, when they let him go, I was like, oh, that's kind of a funny line. Like, yeah, enjoy your freedom while you can. And I was like, yeah, but there's something else going on with him. And he's not going to be that easy to get back once you blow your shot home, which you're going to do. So before we get there, Regina, dressed as the evil queen, storms into Henry's knighting ceremony and basically is like, ooh, I'm here, I'm a threat. It felt like she forgot how to play the evil queen, which is in the Enchanted Forest context. So she, like, knows how to play the evil queen when she needs to in Storybrook in those small doses. But I think marching in and ruining a charming family event was a little bit, she's a little rusty. So she walks in and she's sort of like, yeah, I'm here and stop doing what you're doing. And then she sort of gets the hang of it and just like freezes Snow and David. And she's like, all right, I'm just going to take them hostage and Emerald figure out what to do. And I love the scene of them sitting in the tower where they're just like, oh, we're going to be saved, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, please stop talking. Like, she's like, none of this is real. And she's just like pacing in her evil queen outfit. I thought that her acting in this whole episode was just so good. She's so good at walking the line between these characters.
And blending that line, and it's so crazy to me because Lana is so talented. She can play this over-the-top, ridiculous character. I mean, the Evil Queen is absolutely ridiculous, and we still eat it up, every moment of it, and we still take her seriously as a threat. And then she can play Regina, who is much more collected and much more businesswoman-like, and it's crazy that they are essentially the same person, and yet they feel so distinct. And now that she's playing Regina, playing the queen, and you can still tell the difference, you can see this third character within her portrayal is insane to me, because I don't think everybody can do that, but like you said, she does it so, so well.
Yeah, it blows my mind, especially when you get to a scene and you kind of stop and you're like, oh, she's this character playing this character, but trying not to reveal that she's still this character. And, you know, she has all these ulterior motives, but she just stays in the zone. And she's able to deliver so much with these characters. It's really unbelievable. But the person, she's not able to really trick Emma the first time, even by taking her parents. So Emma shows up and she isn't there to fight. She's there to offer the key to the kingdom. She's like, no, I'll just give everything to you. It'll be fine. Just give me back my parents. And Regina's like, oh, seriously? I gotta deal with this. And she's like, no, Emma, I think you should fight me because you're the savior. And she's like, no, that's okay.
I'm sorry. I just, like, I have so much rage at this part. And that Emma right now, because, yes, the kingdom has been safe for a while. The evil queen has been banished. But for a second, do you think that Snow would let her daughter grow up being this bad at recognizing and fighting evil? It doesn't make sense to me. Snow is a warrior, okay? She didn't necessarily grow up that way, but she became that person, and she understands the importance of staying vigilant. And the fact that she let her daughter be this wimpy person just, it makes me so angry. And, like, I was imagining them sitting there being like, really, Emma? Really? You're going to give up our whole kingdom? Like, we're old. Just let us die. Protect the kingdom. That is your mission in life now. Like, I just imagine Snow being so pissed.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, here's me playing devil's advocate, because I completely agree. Like, Snow would never let this happen. But you know how parents sometimes, like, decide for their children, like, I want them to have a better life. I want them to have everything I never had. And maybe in this wish for Snow just wanted Emma not to have to fight and didn't want her to be that person because Snow knows how difficult it is to be the fighter and the warrior. So she raised her as a princess and raised her differently. I don't think it's true because Snow is a serious badass, but maybe?
Yeah.
I guess. It's a good point.
Yeah. But I also think feeding off of where Kristen was going, the wish that the Evil Queen wanted was that Emma would not be the savior in this universe without having the upbringing of, if we die, you are basically the savior of the kingdom. That wasn't instilled in her. So there's no warrior instinct. There's nothing that could trigger her to jump into action because that wasn't the wish. The wish was to remove every sort of natural instinct to being the savior. So maybe it was just a complete wash, anything that could lead to that, including being trained to fight for the kingdom. I don't know how wishes work.
Yeah. Like how realistic is this wish verse? Like, are we supposed to read this much into it, or are we just supposed to admit that Emma is a wimp in this universe?
Probably not, but it did make me angry and I had to rage about it. So thank you, Onceable listeners, for listening to me.
I'm pretty sure it was probably in everybody's brain a little bit. Like, seriously? Oh, yeah.
I was expecting her, like, really expecting her to show up, like, ready to fight. And then she came with that stupid white jacket that you give, like, a 10-year-old when they're making their communion. You know, it's like, no one ever wears that, Emma. Just take it off. So then Henry shows up, and he is ready to fight, but it is in that moment where Regina sort of surrenders to it, which I thought was really interesting. Well, first she killed the Charmings, but that won't stick because it's a wish verse. Completely forgot about that. She, like, ripped out their hearts and crushed them. But also, how does she know that it won't stick? I felt a little uneasy when that was going on because I was like, oh, this isn't a thing that when she like wiped her hands clean of the dust, she was like, this isn't real. And she's like, you killed my parents.
I was more than a little nervous. I'm like, does Regina know that this isn't gonna stick? Like, are you sure? You're really banking on this being a fake world because you just killed Snow and Charming. Like, seriously. I was a little nervous about that, too. And, you know, I'm glad it doesn't appear to be that way. But, man, I was pretty nervous for a second there.
Yeah, because you have that moment where she crushes their hearts and she's like, none of this is real. To then seeing Robin Hood and being like, this is so real. I was like, literally 5 minutes ago, you killed two people.
And now you're like, but I found a Robin. It's all real. Everything's real. What are you talking about?
I know. I think I've been trying to have Henry kill Regina for like the past 20 minutes. He's finally going to try and do it right now. So Henry kind of steps up and into action with the sword that Emma brought with her into this universe. And Emma's been having dreams, so she does have some of her memory left, and it's told through dreams. Like, she's like, oh, I woke up from this weird dream where I was in this place called Storybrooke and all this stuff. And they're like, oh, so silly, have a cupcake. So they leave her be, but the sword comes with her, and Henry gets a hold of it and throws it at Regina, and there's this really cool gift set on Tumblr that I saw yesterday or this morning, where I think it's one gif of Emma, one of Regina, one of Henry, one of David, and they all throw swords the same way over their head. So it's like this inherent family thing. It's really cool. But Henry throws the sword at Regina, and Emma's able to stop it. And that's when she snaps out of her wish state and comes to and realizes, oh, that was a close one. Regina is here. Now we're going to leave. And they take the magic bean. They go to leave. And Regina even says to Emma, much to, I'm sure, all of our satisfaction, like, I really can't stand this version of you. And she's just like, Emma says something about singing. And Regina, like, kind of raises an eyebrow. And Emma was like, oh, not that you heard. So, like, she was so not even badass Disney princess, like below G-rated Disney princess. She was quite intolerable. Another slightly intolerable moment that is so uncharacteristic of Regina is when she sees Robin, and Robin has no idea who she is and what's going on. He's just trying to rob Emma and Regina, and she lingers so long, and Emma refuses to leave without her, that their ticket home dries up, and now we're stuck. And that's all she wrote. Oh, also, I guess back in Storybrooke, David had a thing with the Evil Queen where he made a wish, and I completely forgot all about that. He makes a wish, and he wishes for the Evil Queen to get what she deserves, and she does. Which is everything that's already happened. Oh, and Gideon turns her into a snake. There's a lot that still happened that I completely forgot about. Yeah, so Gideon runs into her on the street, and at this point we only know that it's the hooded figure, and he turns her into a snake. So I'm not really sure if that is David's wish actually coming true. Like, oh, she did get what she deserved, but then that would mean that he triggered Gideon coming, which I really hope is not the case, because that would just be more family drama that Emma does not need. Oh, my father inadvertently wished for this hooded figure to come to Storybrooke and kill me. So hopefully that's not a thing. That is it. We're going to pick up in this alternate universe in a few months, which is exciting because I always enjoy adventure stories of two or more characters being stranded and having to find their way back. I think that Sean McGuire is signed for a couple episodes, so we'll get some closure there finally between Robin and Regina. And then, you know, we'll get back to Storybrooke, where maybe Zelina will play some sort of role. She's kind of been forgotten about again. Classic Once Upon a Time. Too many characters.
I have to say, yeah. I definitely forgot about Robin coming back.
How?
Like, I forgot. I really did just forget that Sean McGuire was making his return. I pay attention and I see these things that are coming up for Once Upon a Time, but then they just, there's a lot of stuff going on in my brain. So they float away. So when he like rides up at the end there, I was like, hey, yeah, okay, all right. I can dig it. Like, I can see this being how we get a Robin in the picture again. Like, it's a different Robin, but we'll get there. Like, okay. So, I know people were kind of concerned as to how Robin Hood was going to make an appearance on the show, and I think if they're going to go this route, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think this finally answers a question that we've had for a few weeks now, which is, how are they going to bring him back without it being in like a dream or underworld situation? And this is the answer, and I'm really okay with it, which is good. Because it's not permanent, but it does provide a way for it to happen. And I can't believe we didn't think about this. Like, I think because we've been so focused on like how Once Upon a Time fails itself, and we didn't even consider scenarios where they usually thrive, which are
right.
Alternate realities.
It's true. Like, you just, you think if they're bringing Robin back, you want to think that it's the Robin. Like, it's the Robin that was with Regina and that loves her and all of that, and you want it to be that guy. So you're trying to think of ways for him to be back. But you forget that Robin Hood is this, you know, fairy tale character, and that exists in his own world and, you know, has his own story in the Enchanted Forest that has nothing to do with who he is in Storybrooke or who he was. So, yeah, it makes total sense that he could just show up in this Wishverse, and you just don't, it's not something that you think of because you're so determined to get that same guy back. And now we have a very different Robin, I'm assuming. Like, he'll probably have a lot of the same qualities as Robin we know, but since he doesn't know Regina and we haven't seen them, this Robin be with her, it's going to be very different too.
Yeah, and I was thinking, does this mean that Marion's alive? Does Roland exist? Like, you know, there's a lot of...
Poor Roland.
Yeah, I know. Poor guy. Like,
it's just hanging out with Lil Jon and...
I know. Oh, like, will he know that he has a sister somewhere? Like, all these little things just keep piling up in Once Upon a Time's Forgotten Bin of Treasures.
Yeah.
Oh, and Aladdin and Jasmine were like, peace, going to Agrabah. So.
And I'm screaming at them, why didn't you do this last episode? Like, you could have gotten out and never been a problem. You caused all of this. It's all your fault. I don't blame the Evil Queen. I blame Jasmine for not making the wish immediately.
Yeah, it's all her fault. I mean, hopefully we'll figure out what happened in Agrabah. I hope they just didn't leave and that's right? It. Can you imagine? That would be horrendous.
I'm guessing that they've got a lot more coming because they cast Jafar and we've seen him like barely at all.
Okay.
We haven't seen him in Storybrooke. We've really only seen him in the flashbacks. And I feel like he's a pretty big character to have show up, like, you know, in a couple of flashbacks and call it a day. Like, I feel that Jasmine and Aladdin and Jafar will probably be back in Storybrooke before the end of the year, before the season finale.
Yeah, plus I think I saw Karen David, like, rather recently on someone's Instagram from the cast. So she's still around, obviously, yeah. Filming things. Because, yeah. Oh, that would just be awful if they cut them out after this.
And honestly, if this is how they're going to work, like, we're used to them dividing the season in two. If this is how they're going to kind of work stories together, I'm game for it. You know, we kind of had a little... in a little arc in the beginning half of this and with the Evil Queen, and she's still around, but I would be okay if we have a little more Evil Queen and then maybe that gets wrapped up and we are fully involved with Aladdin and Jasmine and Jafar. It's a way to kind of do what they've been doing, but without making it, okay, now it's time to go to Neverland. Okay, now we're going to the underworld and now we're going to do Frozen. Like, it's a little more seamless and it definitely works.
Yeah, and we need to get back to the savior mythology, and Aladdin's the key to doing that. So yes. To loop it, to wrap up the Evil Queen, I think is a great call, and then move into the savior mythology, because that was the real driver for this season. So when we come back, we're going to have 11 or 12, probably 12 episodes in 2017 to wrap up the Evil Queen, wrap up Aladdin, and also really figure out what and who the savior is and what it entails and how the Shears play into everything and whose fate can be changed and whose can't. And there's a lot of questions hanging in the air to wrap up in 12 episodes, and I'm kind of glad we're not as cut and dry as we were this time last year, where it was like, oh, we're done with this, now we're going to move on to Camelot when we come back. Or no, we were done with Camelot.
It was on to the underworld. No, I also really like that I thought we were going to get the wrapping up of this Emma and the person under the cloak storyline. I kind of like that we didn't get it. We all think we know that Gideon is the one under that hood, but I have this feeling that it's not him that stabs Emma, that there's someone else that's going to don that hood, or that the person we're seeing as Gideon maybe isn't truly him, or I don't know. There's got to be some other way, because I don't think he's the one who ends up stabbing her. So I think that's going to be an interesting, you know, story to finish playing out to. Maybe it's the finale, maybe it's not. Maybe we get it in the middle of April and, you know, the story has a lot more to go after that. Who knows? But yeah, it's going to be, I think the second half is going to be really strong. There's a lot of stuff they've set up that can really pay off in a big way if they do it right.
Yeah. So we will definitely be back to talk about all of that in 2017. I don't know what we can do over hiatus. If you have any suggestions, let us know, because last year we were able to watch Hercules because we had the idea that we knew that he was coming in the spring, but this time maybe we'll watch Aladdin. Although, to be fair, I haven't been able to watch a single Robin Williams movie since he passed away, so I might not watch Aladdin, but I can recall it from memory pretty well.
Yeah, I've been getting better at watching them. We just watched Flubber the other day. Maybe me for the first time. How did I miss Flubber, guys? Wow. I have no idea. It's ridiculous.
The scene where he puts it on the bottom of the basketball shoes is my favorite part.
Aw. That's cute. I really loved the recurring gag of the bowling ball and the golf ball coming back and hitting people over and over again. That was pretty great. I would be down for watching Aladdin, mostly because that is one of my least watched Disney movies. Not for any particular reason. It was just one of the ones that I never gravitated to.
Can I ask you an Aladdin-related question?
Sure.
Have you ever seen Aladdin and the King of Thieves?
I think so.
It is.
I have seen them all.
Incredible. Return of Jafar does not count because it's a horrible, horrible movie.
Is that the one where they sing the song and then there's all the swords? Or is that in the first one?
That's in the first one.
Maybe I haven't seen it then.
Yeah, Return of Jafar, oddly, Danielle loves, which I found out, and it almost broke up our friendship because that movie doesn't exist in my head. It's not real. Robin Williams doesn't even play the genie. It's not real. But The King of Thieves is just so funny. It is so well done, and it's wonderful. It's so good. It's so good. And you will have a crush on Aladdin's dad when you watch it. Oh my God.
Truth.
It's great. Anyway, we'll figure out something fun to do in our 3-month break, and we'll be back to break down where we left off. And until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.